Hello, and welcome to the Anxiety RX podcast, a show created by an anxiety specialist and neuroscientist, me, that offers unique, practical, and actionable advice to help you understand what anxiety truly is and exactly what you can do to empower yourself to resolve it. I'm your host, Dr. Russell Kennedy, an MD who suffered with crippling anxiety for 30-plus years, and traditional therapy from psychiatrists and psychologists really didn't help me feel better. And I also didn't like being on psych meds. In 2013, after burning out and leaving medical practice, I came to the conclusion that if I was ever going to heal my anxiety, I would have to do it myself. And that's exactly what I did, drawing from experiences with psychedelics and holistic healing, and combining those modalities with my scientific academic background in medicine, neuroscience, and developmental psychology. Here on the Anxiety RX podcast, I offer a distinctly non-traditional and non-medical approach to understanding and healing anxiety. So despite the fact I'm trained as a physician, in no way is what I say and suggest to be construed as medical advice, because none of the ways I use to resolve anxiety has anything to do with traditional allopathic medicine. From my own healing, I've created a distinctly non-traditional understanding and approach that helps thousands of people from all over the world understand and relieve their chronic anxiety. So if you're ready, let's get into today's episode. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Anxiety RX podcast, which is kind of a double thing today because my friend Nima Romani and I are starting a podcast called the Manxiety Podcast, which is devoted mostly towards men, but I'm sure we want women to listen to it too. I think our little catchphrase is, this is the podcast you wish your boyfriend slash husband would listen to. So we're going to do an episode today of both the Anxiety RX podcast and the new Manxiety show. And I am going to have Nima take it over from here because we're going to talk today about boundaries. And Nima is an expert on interpersonal anxiety. So this should be beneficial for me as well as everybody else. Hello, my friend.
Hello, my friend. Dr. Ross. How are you, it's so good to see you.
I didn't go to even a medical school to be called Mr. Thank you very much.
Let this be a reminder to you, this organization will not tolerate failure.
I am very badly burned.
Something funny happens.
You shocked me. Okay. Well,
something happens. We regress to teenagehood every time we hang out.
I think one of the things we talked about, you and I, in this podcast, the Manxiety podcast, is that we're going to make it entertaining as well as, you know, because men, trying to drag men into an environment where they're trying to get more emotionally literate, you know, you're probably not going to get a whole lot of like buying into that. So it's like we put in some humor, we put in some like, this is what my life is like, this is what your life has been like. I've been divorced, you've been divorced. We've both been through some significant issues. So it's kind of like, can we share this with the younger population of men and even the older population of men and just give them something that they can hold on to from two guys who have been there, but also have a lot of training in interpersonal relationships.
Yeah, we've studied it, but also the work lives in our bones. And so
and
really
my
cool.
And my testicles.
And my testicles. Okay. All right. So the Manxiety, the concept of the Manxiety show is really about kind of honoring the challenges that men have, the anxieties that men have in love, in sex, in money, the things that are most prevalent. And you just nailed it there when you said men and emotional challenges with connecting to our emotions. It's because when we're children, if you're a boy, when we have any emotion, we've been silenced. It's like, you know, put up
Big
or shut
don't
up.
Cry,
yeah, don't you know, cry. Shut up.
Suck it
you know,
up.
If you have suck it up, buttercup. So we really don't have a range, a literacy of emotions other than connecting to anger. And that's also invalidated. So men are in crisis. And this is it's time that we start educating. Just, you know, why we're doing this is because we're so inspired to
save the world.
We're pretty inspired to identify the parts of us, parts of our journey, that the holes that we didn't have filled. And so what we're doing is we're filling those gaps for others. And this conversation is kind of an extension of the last one that we talked about when we talked about fawning. And mm-hmm. so we're talking today about fawning and boundaries. And boundaries basically are, what are boundaries actually,
well,
Russ?
First of all,
why don't we start
back.
By
yeah, I want to go back and have
that.
You explain what fawn, I want to have you go back and explain what fawning is.
Yeah, fawning, basically, fawning is a reflexive, it's actually a trauma response. We have fight, flight, and freeze, but most of us don't really talk about, nobody's really talking about the fourth one, which is the most prevalent, which is fawning. And fawning is a reflexive desire to perform, to prevent the other person from getting upset. So we take on a role. It's a niceness. It's a charm. It's a flattery. It's a
doing
charm.
Doing things for other people, violating our own boundaries to be like, this is the nice guy syndrome. Oh, you know,
good girl
really nice
or nice guy.
Yeah. And it really is something that, you know, if you are truly a nice guy and this is truly coming from your heart and your authenticity, absolutely. But if you're just doing this to sort of get a reaction and show her or whoever, look how great I am because I've done this, or look how nice I am because I brought you flowers.
It's performative. It's performative.
And it's transactional as well. Right. It's not coming from an authentic place. So we're going to talk about that today. And like, I think you sent me some questions today that we're going to, I thought were really good. Do you want to read them
out? A few questions that I've been getting quite a bit from my community. And we're going to talk about boundaries. First of all, we got to define what a boundary is.
Oh, sure.
We'll talk a little bit about that. And just a little bit on fawning though, Russ, is the nice guy thing is there's a stark distinction between being kind and being nice. Kindness is coming from a place of I'm good with me no matter what, and I'm kind of coming from a place of overflow. But niceness, there's a manipulative performative aspect to it where you're doing it for perception management.
To get something.
And to get something. There's a trend, like you said, there's a transactional component of it. And so that often happens where we have a very blurred sense of boundaries. Can we kind of go over boundaries? Because that's a difficult thing to actually define. How would you define it from your training and your observation?
Yeah, I think it's more of almost an existential thing. It's like from your family, you'll see how your mother interacts with you is basically where your boundaries, a lot of where your boundaries come from. Your dad too, but you know, is your mother one of these things? Oh, you know, I'll get really upset if you don't come over for dinner on Saturday. You know, I made your special meal. And it's just this, there is this sense like, how do you feel when you're in interaction with this person? Do you feel like it's warm, it's comfortable, it's moving forward, or it's, or at least it's in a comfortable space? Or do you feel like, oh, this person wants to get something from me, but because they're so nice to me, it's very hard for me to just kind of say no and establish my own boundary that no, I already have plans for this Saturday night. I can't come over to the house for dinner.
Yeah. A boundary to me is an energetic, it's kind of like an energetic, it's the shape of who you are. It's an energetic kind of limit of what's, who, where you end and the other person begins. Yeah. And so you're right how it comes from childhood, because like it goes back to childhood where, you know, a mother is breastfeeding her child and then he bites her. Okay. Like he bites and she's like, ah, and then how does she exert her no? And I remember when Dominic was a child, when he was like a little baby, an infant, and we would say no, like he would hit or he would kick. And then we would say no. And the second we would exert a boundary on him, guess how he would react?
Like you react. Not very happy. Like Domsey and you are like clones of each other for sure.
Exactly.
So I can see.
No,
I
but
can see.
He would start to cry. Yeah. He would start to cry because inherently deep down, this is why boundaries, it's important to say, this is why exerting boundaries are so difficult, because when someone exerts their no to us, it feels inherently like a rejection of our whole selves. So the no feels like a rejection. And because of that, if you say no to your mother and she reacts and feels rejected and gives you the impression that if you say no, then she starts crying or gives you the guilt trip, the message that little Rusty gets is that I can't say no without losing affection. And so we then learn, it's the shape of who I am. I learn is that that my values, my beliefs, my preferences, to exert them, how was I responded to? Was I encouraged or was I invalidated, denied, or dismissed? And the way that those boundaries or preferences were treated shapes our relationship to our no moving forward.
Yeah. And that's basically the root cause of enmeshment. You know, when you can't feel good about saying something for your own good, mm-hmm. for fear of disappointing, upsetting someone else, that's
choosing you,
codependent,
choosing you,
enmeshment. Yeah. Yeah. So, and if you choose you all the time, well, that's a different story, but there's certain types of boundaries, you know, of energy boundaries. We have emotional boundaries. We have time boundaries.
Certainly things
that we can be aware of. And it's just allowing people to understand that there are these components to our lives, because if you grew up with an enmeshed family, you don't notice boundaries because you didn't have them.
Yeah. You don't know where you begin and the other person ends.
Absolutely.
And the way that that shows up is when mom is upset, everybody's upset.
Yep.
You know, and naturally, and it's complicated. It's very nuanced too, because with parent-child relationship, a parent, in order to keep the child alive, must violate their boundaries in order to keep their child alive. Like last night, Diana was at a parent meeting with her teachers, and I was putting him to sleep. And I just was like, I just go the F to sleep, you know, just, could you just, there's a book about that. Just go the F to sleep. And I could see that my boundaries were like, if he was an adult, I would be able to say, hey, I'm really tired. I got to honor what my boundaries are. But in parenting, we can't do that. Mm. So parenting is one place where we're violating our boundaries. Another place is if you're working in a job that's unfulfilling and you have to go there because of survival, you're not choosing. Many people go to work and they violate their boundaries. Maybe people go into their family systems and they violate their boundaries. So we're constantly living in a culture of fawning, and it's impacting our health and our relationships.
Yeah. And I think that was very well said. And I think, you know, when you get these things about, you know, violating boundaries, the natural response from that is resentment on both sides. You know,
100%.
I resent my mother for demanding this of me, and she resents me for not capitulating to her needs. So it's one of those things that, and resentment is what I believe kills 95% of relationships. Is it's mm-hmm. resentment that kills us. So if we can be more boundaried and say, okay, this, and you can't do it when you're, you know, both in fight or flight, but pick the time where you can kind of say, hey, you know, I've been making some changes in my life. I'm just saying that I can't come over for dinner on Saturday nights anymore because I have this other gig that I'm doing or whatever, but we could do Sunday or Monday, you know, and then she'll go, well, you know, I really wanted Saturday, but, you know, I mean, she's 90 now, so she doesn't do this anymore, but she used to do things like this when she was a little bit younger. So it's like, she'd be like, okay, you know, that seems all right, because all she really wanted was having me over
connection.
There. And the only way that she knew how to do that was to kind of order me around, because that's what she used to do to me as a child. And it
guilt
worked.
You.
And it worked. You know, so why were our parents do anything differently? Samin and Parviz are the same. Yeah. Why would they do anything differently for you? Because they know it works on you.
They've been great though. Why? Because now I exert my boundaries with my parents, and I say, well, that doesn't work. That doesn't work with me. And so that's completely transformed. Yeah. And what you were talking about, resentment, is very key, because I really wanted to share this. You say you feel resentment when you violate your boundaries. You're resenting her. She's resenting you. But here's the most important piece, and why it's so important as far as from an anxiety and a health standpoint, is that we cannot violate our boundaries without simultaneously creating resentment towards ourselves.
Yeah.
It's like a self-attack. And when you do it again and again and again and again, you burn out your adrenals. If you're dealing with chronic fatigue, it's your body is becoming the boundary. So what I've discovered, and this was like an aha revelation as a chiropractor, this is what made me want to leave my chiropractic practice, is that symptoms are your body's way of exerting boundaries. So if I'm eating too much, drinking too much alcohol, the hangover is my body's attempt at setting a boundary. If I'm eating too much gluten and that's an assault on my system, my body's symptoms, will bring up these boundaries. Symptoms are your body's attempt at giving boundaries. Isn't that a neat reframe that we can give?
I think it's really intuitive for sure. And also the problem, a lot of the problem with that is that the symptoms knock you deeper into alarm, which takes you out of your rational ability to actually see and set those boundaries in the future.
So you abandon yourself even
over
further
and over and over again, you know, and then on top of all that stuff, you feel bad that you can't set boundaries. And right. then that just becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So it's really learning to be able to kind of see yourself in this very aware light. You're not going to change your boundaries overnight, but you can do it slowly. You can start doing it with people, say, in your casual relationships, as opposed to, you know, your family or whatever. Just start creating little things and just get some success with it. You know, like James Clear talks about in Atomic Habits, get little bits of success, and then you're more likely through your prefrontal cortex, your ventrotegmental area, your dopamine circuits, you're more likely to complete that motion to change in the future. Otherwise, if you get shot down immediately, if you go in and tell your mother, I'm not coming over for dinner on Friday night, and that ends it, you know, it's probably not going to go well for either one of you.
Now, let's chat a little bit. I really had on my notes here, it says, to really share like the difference, the nuance of what a boundary is. So let's say you come over and you start
eating cashews like I did a couple nights ago.
Oh, perfect. That's because, I was going to say that.
Be late and I'm starving. I've been looking forward to your cooking all day. So it's like, I am freaking starving. I walk in, I see this bowl of nuts and it's like, I'm eating these nuts, man.
I'm like, dinner will be ready in half an hour. And you're like, okay. He starts going after the cashews.
Yeah, handfuls.
Yeah. Like handfuls. And I'm like, slow down, dude. Dinner's coming. boundary. Yeah. No, but so here it is. Let's use that as a hilarious example. Okay. I literally just thought of that. And then as you said it, hilarious. Okay. So as you say that, as you reach over, let's say I get triggered that you're eating all my food. Okay.
Okay, let me just jump in first.
Nima's
invited me over for dinner. So in my little mind, when I get hungry, I get a little bit irrational, right? So you invite me over for dinner.
Hangry. It's better than getting hangry.
Yeah. You tell me dinner's in half an hour. I'm like, I expected you, Nima, to feed me.
Now.
So now. So
that was your boundary.
Unconsciously look for anything I can eat at this point.
The cashews. See, and what's important is that in that moment, you were respecting a boundary of your body. Your body was saying, I'm hungry. So you were respecting the need. And that's the key that I wanted to mention, is that a boundary is a expression of a need in your body. Mm-hmm. So when I reach and I drink water because I'm thirsty, I am like my body, the symptom of thirst is the boundary. And then I drink. You are hungry when you came over. You grabbed my fucking cashews.
Yep, because they were there.
They were there. It's all good.
Otherwise, if they weren't there, I would say, hey, I need a snack. I haven't eaten all afternoon.
And that is exerting a boundary because a boundary is an expression of an internal need. It's about you. But if you turned around and you were like, what's the matter with you? You're not feeding me. That's not a boundary.
Well, that's the child in me, Nima. That's the child in me going, you know, I have a certain expectation of you that you're going to give me something to eat because I've sort of kept my appetite, you know, in check all afternoon. And now all the flood. Now my boundary was, if there was no cashews there, I would say, hey, look, if it's going to be half an hour, I need a snack. Now, the other option I could have done was just suck it up, stay really hungry for that half hour, go
and smile.
I don't want to upset Nima because, you know, he's gone to all this trouble of making this wonderful food. So I'm just going to suck it up and feel the pain.
That's fawning. Exactly. So exactly. Perfect example. So the key that I really wanted to hammer home on this podcast episode was that a boundary is an expression of our internal needs. Many of us mistake a conversation. If your language is about the other person, like if you came over and you said, what's the matter with you? Where's my dinner? Why haven't you cooked it? you know, where's my dinner, bitch?
Well, I can think that.
You can think it, but that's not exerting a boundary. Yeah. That's being an asshole. Okay. So that's okay. that's the distinction, because most of us don't exert our boundaries and share our boundaries, which is an expression of our internal need, because we don't want to be seen as the bad guy.
Sure.
We don't want to be seen as an asshole. So the key take-home point is that, can you express a need that's internal? And that's what a boundary is: your thirst, your hunger, your symptom, because that provides an opportunity. Because I care about you, I'd be like, oh, absolutely. Yeah. Have some cashews. It'll be ready in half an hour. Do you need anything else? Diana was there. I was like, do you need anything else? Can I get you anything? You're like, nope, you got that. We're good. We're gold. But the question I have for you, I want to kind of address, playing devil's advocate, is what happens if someone doesn't listen to my boundary? What would you do? What do we do when someone, because now, you know, the listeners might be asking, so what do I do if someone doesn't listen to a boundary?
Well, using that example, I would regress into childhood, because I was, you know, when I was hungry as a child, I did not like it. And the other thing I know about myself is I do not like anyone else controlling my destiny in any way at all. Mm. So if you said, you know what, I spent all this time making this food, it's going to be delicious, I don't want you to
don't eat anything.
Yeah, I don't want you to. Now, depending on how you said that, I think I might be okay. Say, look, I know you're hungry. I've spent, you know, the afternoon kind of trying to make this as good as I possibly can. If you need to eat cashews, here they are. But on some level, and I'm not, this isn't a demand, but if you can wait, I'd appreciate it. But if you can't, that's okay.
It's nuanced, isn't it?
It is.
It's very nuanced, because we're humans and it all depends on our state. It depends on our capacity. Sometimes our capacity is little. Sometimes it's a lot. Have we eaten? Have we slept? So for the listeners to really get the breadth of this conversation, and boundaries are something that's a work in progress and they're negotiated. And so if somebody doesn't listen to our boundary, that's a time for us to kind of really lean in and re-express it from what's happening inside. And if they still don't respect it, well, this is where we get to choose, because this is the should I stay or go conversation. This is my specialty in helping people in a should I stay or go situation. Just recently, I spoke about this with you when we went for breakfast on Sunday. I had a client kind of challenge my integrity and my boundaries. And it got me a chance to go inward and reflect and say, okay, was I in integrity with my values? Yes, I was. Now, after I connected with that, it gives me an opportunity now to have a repair conversation and say, hey, during this rupture, during this conflict, this is my values. My priorities are to my company, my family, my business. And, you know, I didn't put you ahead of my business. And if that's going to be a problem for you, that I choose my values over you, now we can make a decision. If you're okay with that, I'm not going to abandon myself so that I can appease you. And that's a difficult choice point, isn't it, Russ?
Yeah, but you said it with this person in such a way that you practiced beforehand, you dropped into your body, you were consistent, you were clean with it when you say it. Now, if you're not clean with it, if there's all sorts of edges.
What do you mean clean? Can you define what clean means?
Clean is like, okay, whatever they're going to say, I'm not going to get overly upset about it and start coming from a reactive place.
Defensive, not getting defensive.
Exactly. Yeah. So, because then everybody gets into that. So if you project this image, like, this is what my boundaries are, these are my priorities. And even if you're in there saying something like, I'm trying to change, because sometimes we have these relationships with people and we have let them kind of steamroller us. We have, or we've steamrollered them. And it's like, we're changing a step in this dance and it's going to be uncomfortable for them. So just doing it in such a way that it's not against them, it's more for ourselves.
You. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So it's just,
and then standing in that and being compassionate first to ourselves and then understanding and saying, I'm giving you an opportunity. These are my values. This is my priorities. You know, I'm not going to abandon myself for you.
Right.
And what'll happen then is that you give them each other an opportunity. It's very nuanced. It might be we need to renegotiate our relationship, right? Like you and I, for example, our friendship has gone through so many. That's what rupture and repair is, kind of like the getting to know you phase when you're building a secure foundational relationship.
If you're not boundaried, one of you is going to, you know, just keep going along with the other one's demands, even though you don't see that they're reasonable. And then all the resentment builds up and then that doesn't go well at all. So it is about repair. It is about, you know, creating and boundaries ultimately are creating a fertile ground for repair. You're not going to want to do this anymore with this particular person. You have to change it. You can't change it overnight, but you can start doing it slowly. But if you stay, you know, reserved within yourself and emotionally grounded. And that's what I mean about clean. I'm clean with this. Whatever they're going to say, I'm clean with it.
I'm good with me. I'm true to my values. I'm true to my priorities and I'm compassionate with them. And it's challenging if they can't meet you at the same, it's challenging if they don't meet you there and that is a potential rupture, but you don't want to be French in a friendship or a relationship with somebody. You're expected to give up yourself in order to maintain the attachment. So it's important for us. This is an attachment question is because, you know, why do we violate our boundaries? It's because, you know, there's a competing attachment. If I exert my boundaries and I risk losing you, if I'm not resourced within myself and I haven't healed my, you know, attachment traumas and I haven't worked through my, you know, integrated my shadows and I haven't really owned my own self-worth, I'm going to abandon myself to maintain an attachment and then give not fully me to this relationship. And now we're creating a codependency.
And then resent it. So, and that's
what most codependencies are run with resentment.
Oh, of course. That's the fuel that runs, you know, codependency and merging and enmeshment and that kind of thing too. So a lot of people, you know, who have porous boundaries, they need to be needed. Like it's really important for them that they are needed. They're important for what they can give because they've trained themselves through operant conditioning that they have a sense of importance only when they provide something.
Right.
And it's a way of manipulating as well.
Yeah. So it's manipulative.
It's not clean. It's enmeshed. It's codependent. And it just creates all sorts of resentment on both sides. So
yeah.
I wanted to get back to those questions, though. Like you said, you
know, I got one more question here, but the point here is that it is porous boundaries. When we don't allow those boundaries to express themselves, it's because, you know, we don't love ourselves, we don't appreciate ourselves, and we are willing to risk losing ourselves for the attachment, and that is codependency, and that's exactly where resentment builds, and then this is basically what trauma bonds come from.
And a lot of times it's not your fault. It's basically how you were raised. You know, you were raised in an environment where there was porous boundaries. And, you know, kids just follow what they see. So if they see a family that's completely enmeshed with each other, they don't know about boundaries. Like they just, it just doesn't come into their frame of reference. So of course your relationships are always going to be fraught with resentment and, you know, you're giving too much or maybe you're taking too much because that was the pattern that you saw in your own family. So it's all about awareness. It's all about, okay, how were disputes resolved in the family?
Yeah. 100%.
Did people have the right to their own emotional garden? You know, so you have four people in a family and does everybody have their right to know, you know, mom's feeling upset? That doesn't necessarily mean that all the other three people in the family have to be upset as well. Often
that's
the case, but it's just like, does each member of the family, can they have their own garden and can that garden be separate? Can you close the door to that garden so the other members can't come in? And that's fine.
And that's exactly why people don't exert their boundaries because we don't want to be the bad guy. If I exert my boundaries and it offend you, then I'm the bad guy. So then I'll fawn and people please as a result. So number two question, that first one was what if someone, The first one was, what if someone doesn't listen to my boundary? Well, give it a shot and exert that again. And then if they're not willing to, you don't need to be in a relationship with somebody who isn't, because that's not really. Yeah.
Nice recap there.
Number two, what if I regret my boundaries and want to change them?
Tell me more about that one.
So that's a question I get quite a bit. So let's say, I mean, a classic one, a boundary, let's say a man and a woman are dating and first date, second date, and all of a sudden they have sex. She says, like, let's consent to sex. And then afterwards feels guilty about it.
She does.
Let's say she does, or one of them do, right? Okay. Usually it's that's the story that I hear from our cycle breaker
typical.
Students.
Like, yeah,
typical, standard, pretty standard, really.
Pretty
standard, really. And then all of a sudden they go back and they go, shit, I went a little too far. Mm. Now what do I do?
Right.
You know, what happens there? And so how would you kind of take that on?
I think it's to be honest and compassionate with yourself first. Mm. You know, I think that's a lot of where we create so many problems. I mean, I had this story in my book about, you know, how you get a donkey to do something. You either hit him with a stick or give him a carrot. And I think so often, especially in this society, we hit ourselves with sticks because it does work. Like, overtly, it does work.
Yeah. But shaming ourselves.
As Neufeld would say,
at what cost?
So, hitting yourself with a stick works. And we don't give ourselves enough carrots, because if you give yourself a carrot, you're kind of putting yourself in a framework like, you know what? Yeah, I made a mistake, maybe.
Yeah.
But I'm in this emotionally grounded place. I'm in my own garden, and I can kind of make a rational decision as to how to progress from here. Mm. Do I talk to this person? Do I text them? If they don't text me back, am I going to get devastated about this? Do I have actually awareness and control over this situation? Or am I just going to tumble into my old patterns of behavior and probably, you know, hit myself with a stick for the next 2 months? Mm. So it's really understanding through awareness is like, how can I be kind to myself first about this?
About violating my boundaries in the first place.
And what was the boundary that I actually violated? Mm. You know, what was that thing? Did you go out before? It's like, there's no way I'm going to have sex with them tonight. There's no way I'm going to have sex. Not a chance. And then if you fall into that, that's difficult, because it's, you make the intention, you have your own best interests at heart, and then you kind of betray yourself that way.
Right. Yeah. So, that was exactly it. We have to first be super duper, compassionate with why we let our boundaries down. Yeah. Boundaries are very difficult. Let me give you an example. This happened with me as well. Like, I in my community, I put everything into helping my clients win.
Yep.
And sometimes that means violating my own boundaries of time. Mm-hmm. So I get DMs when my clients get triggered. I teach my clients how to take their triggers and turn it into deeper self-love.
Yep.
Right? Similar to what you do within the context of relationships. So when they get into conflict, I will, in the midst of my weekends, start to respond to them, you know.
I've seen you do this many, many, many times.
Yes, yes. And my wife will sometimes remind me, because I'm so immersed, sometimes enmeshed with really helping them win. And so sometimes, and when do the conflicts happen? Weekends, Sundays, Saturdays. They always get into conflicts on weekends. And so that's when the DMs and the Voxers start coming in. And then I start doing that. And so one day, I just remember I was at the Vancouver Aquarium with my family, with Dominic and Diana, and I was helping a client through her trigger and her conflict. And then I just paused. And then I said, listen, I really have to keep my Sunday to my family. And let's reconvene this at another time. You know, I really got to set a boundary. And guess what happened?
Well, you felt better about yourself.
I did. But what happened was, she then was like, I'm so sorry. She went into a shame spiral. And then she kind of stopped showing up on the trainings. Mm. She would put her camera on. She would dissociate, because now she went into a shame spiral, which brought up a crap ton of guilt for me, because there it is. I exert, this is my story.
Sure.
There I go. I exert my boundaries and then they get butthurt about it. That it explodes and it turns them into a shame spiral. And then I feel guilt for setting a boundary. And then I'm like, see, now I'm afraid to now because now in the future, I'm trigger happy of just setting a boundary because it's going to hurt their feelings. And I really want them to get better and I want them to heal. And then, but the answer is, speak your truth anyway. And it was been a few weeks. I haven't heard from her. Then I reached out and I said, hey, it's been a while since I've seen you. Was it because I set that boundary? I understand how that must have been difficult for you. And I had to set it anyway. Let's repair. So the take home point is for this question of what if I want to change my boundary and set it is just be prepared for repair. Rupture and repair, relationships are messy. Repair is messy. Be willing, have the willingness to repair.
Especially with yourself, right? Like give yourself an understanding, like she should give this herself or understanding that, you know, yeah, I overreacted. I overreacted. I felt guilty. I went into a shame spiral. But do I really need to do that? Like what happened? So in that case, you know, there's your need to be needed, which is quite powerful and overwhelming. And I'm glad to see that you're kind of moving away from that a little bit. And then her need to be heard at all hours of the day or whatever. So both of those things came into conflict and compassionately, sounds like you were very compassionate when you said
repair.
It, you know, because it's not, it's going to cause some waves. Like it's
not black and white,
uncomfortable, especially if you've been working on these boundaries, these templates, these organizational structures of your life for your whole life. It's going to be messy at first. And there's going to be that initial, you know, maybe I'll just go back to people pleasing again because it was so familiar.
Told you.
It was
punished.
So familiar.
I'm getting punished for setting my boundaries again. Yeah. And she wasn't actually punishing me. She was just having her own experience.
Well, she was punishing herself by the sounds of it.
Exactly. 100%. 100%. So the last question, these are super duper helpful. The last question is why, when we're setting boundaries, is it important to make it about us?
Well, we can't make it about anybody else. Otherwise it's codependence. If you're trying to make a boundary based on someone else's needs, you're doing the exact opposite of creating a boundary, right?
Focus on what's happening internally then.
And this I notice specifically more with women than men, but it's hard to set a boundary where you may be disappointing someone. Men are a little more able to do that. And women are more, this is just a general rule, not always, but it's more, women are kind of like the glue of the society. So if they aren't available, you know, it's really difficult, I find. Men are a little easier to be able to kind of go, look, I can't do this. It's not going to work for me, whatever.
Yeah.
But women, it's available just part of their makeup to be connected, and especially connected through language. You know, man, we're connected through like sports and, you know, punching each other on the arm and, you know, teasing each other and that kind of stuff.
Hey, let's go to the gym and have a workout.
Same.
Or let's go for golf. Let's go for a golf, you know, golfing or whatever.
But women, it's much more of a collaborative. It's much more of an integrative
emotional
experience. Exactly. So that's such fertile ground for boundary violations because,
huge.
You know, each of them wants to be, and I don't mean to sort of, you know, minimize women here, but each of them wants to be so connected that you can't have that like mutual connection. Someone usually has a need, like, oh, I can't come this weekend because I got to look after my kids or whatever. Someone usually has a need. And if they feel like they can't choose no, that's a big problem. And I think men have an easier time saying no than women do. So I think the boundary exercise is great for men because we don't really even think about boundaries to start with. But for women, just being compassionate with yourself while you're doing it and understand that it's going to be messy. It's going to be painful because you've gone through your whole life with this familiar program where you can kind of, this is the other thing women do is they smooth things over. They smooth things over, right? Until the next blow up.
Yeah. 100%. It is the fear of being abandoned. Mm-hmm. We have these two fears, the fear of abandonment and fear of engulfment that are breathing down our necks, the fear of being abandoned by them. So we don't say anything or the fear of being consumed by them. So we have to. So it's either we feel abandoned or consumed. And this is the two primary fears that we're all, the task of everyone to deal with in within interpersonal relationships. So this is a huge topic. I mean, we could go on and on. And boundaries are something that are developed over time. What's the word? Flexible. They come and they go. Yeah. They come and they go. They're either super duper rigid. The idea is not to have such super rigid boundaries that we're imprisoned by them and we shut people away, and not completely porous where we lose ourselves. It's very nuanced. It's something that's negotiated through rupture and repair. So it's super important to have the skills to become trigger proof and to take conflict and turn it into deeper intimacy. One of the things I'm super grateful for about my relationship with you is that we have a secure relationship where you can speak what's going on. I can hear your back. You can say your no, and I don't, you know, take it as an attack, right? And vice versa.
You can see the mistakes I make in my life and treat me with compassion. And I can see the mistakes you've made in your life and treat you with compassion as well. And I think if we did that as human beings, we would live just such easier life. And so when I talk about boundaries, it's basically, I have like an ABC thing, like, right? Awareness, like, how do you feel when this person is interacting with you? Like, is it something that sort of gets your back up, or is it something like, oh, I really enjoy being with this person? That's the first thing. Now, sometimes we can have boundaries with a person that we really like, and we tend to sort of give them a little extra leeway because we really like them. Now, that's kind of a boundary violation too, and it's a bit of a nuance, but it's more being aware, like, how do I feel with this person? And then the next thing is, like, go into your body, go into your breath. Like, what really happens to me when I look at saying I've been invited to two different things on Saturday night. I'm going to have to disappoint one of them. How do I feel about disappointing this person?
The lesser of two evils.
And you may even pick the one that hurts more because you think that that's probably a better choice just in a perfect world. Of course, we don't live in a perfect world. And then just having compassion for yourself for setting those boundaries, because ultimately you are creating better relationships for yourself, better relationships for the other people that you're involved with, because the more boundary, the more you can stay in your own garden and they can stay in their garden, the more connected, ironically, you'll actually be.
Right. Because you know that the person that you're in a relationship with isn't people pleasing to be with you. You're getting the authentic version of them, not the watered down, you know. How would you feel? Yeah. How would you feel if the person that's friends with you has been fawning with you the whole time?
Yeah.
Like that just feels gross. Right. And so we really have this deep desire for secure relationships. But we have these conditioning and these fears, the fawning response, fear of being punished for speaking our truth, that gets in the way. And that's why I'm super duper inspired to have this conversation, to educate people who want to go deeper. And I'm grateful to have you on the path with me educating.
Yeah. I enjoy having conversations with you about this to kind of just say, hey, this is what happens. This is why I ate the cashews. This is what's happening, right? And the fact that we can go about that and just sort of say, this is what's happening, right?
Yeah. Just make sure you stop at Costco on the way to my place next time and replenish those five cups of cashews that you've
down your gullet.
Gorged, you bastard.
Oh, well, yeah. You know, we do our best. See, now I'm boundaried enough to know that you're just joking, right? So I go, okay, I don't have to get resentful.
Actually, I'm not.
Okay, there you go. So that's a good boundary we can set right there, because I'm not either. So we can just keep working on it. Just keep working on this together. But yeah, I mean, I think just to wind this up, it's really boundaries are ultimately just your relationships, how you relate to other people. And if they're very porous, your relationships aren't going to go well. Right. Yeah. Eventually they're going to crack up.
They're essentially how I'm relating to me and how I'm reporting to you my relationship to myself. That's what a boundary is to me, is boundary is my embodied somatic relationship to myself. It starts there, and then reporting it as a gift to you, because I want to have a relationship with you that respects mine and your boundaries. And that's where secure attachments really are formed.
Yeah. And to kind of wind it up too, like, we can be a reactive self, which is basically people pleasing, fawning, even aggressiveness, anger. That's a reactive self. It's very hard to have relationships that work when you're living in your reactive self. And a lot of us who had a lot of trauma as kids live on our reactive self.
100%.
Now, can you be your authentic self? But you will only find your authentic self once you start setting boundaries. Because if you're always in this, you know, this cork in the ocean being thrown around, you never really know what it's like to be on dry land. And right. if you've never grown up with boundaries, it's one of those, you don't even see it. You don't even see that they're there. You just know, hey, my relationships don't tend to go well. I tend to be a loner. I tend to be aggressive with people. I can't maintain friendships, all that kind of stuff. All those things are because you haven't cultivated boundaries. And you're living in a sort of a transactional, semi-codependent, enmeshed world, which is a very difficult place to live. And it's a very anxiety, bringing you back to anxiety, just to wrap it up, is a very anxious place to live, because if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for everything, or whatever the saying is. And that alarm will just keep building in your system. And the alarm will prevent you, ironically, from creating those boundaries, because you'll go back to the groove of how you interacted as a child. And that tends to not go well for you, especially if you had trauma as a child. So it's just learning awareness, then going into your body, and then being compassionate with yourself. That's really how you start with your boundaries, and how you kind of maintain them. Because that's another podcast, is how you maintain these damn things.
100%. It's a moment to moment practice. So those that are super duper, I'm stoked for the people that are really wanting to delve into this topic a lot deeper and learn more. I'm doing a workshop on this.
Okay.
It's Friday, the 5th. Is it the 15th of March? Yeah, it's coming up. I provide a link there. It's called From Fawning to Secure Boundaries, How to Elegantly Advocate for Yourself in Relationships. And what I'm teaching is how you can take responsibility to become kind of like your own inner advocate, so that you're not drowning yourself to please others. And we could talk about fawning, where that comes from. And then I have a little quiz that I do just during it's a 3-hour workshop, and it's only $30 for anybody
is
who's
Bambi
super interested.
In the quiz?
Bambi. Yeah. It's okay. Bambi, hashtag Bambi no more is kind of the Bambi and Thumper. Exactly. And so there's a little quiz where we kind of give ourselves a rating on how our boundaries are, so we know exactly what to work on.
Ooh,
and then there's going to be some somatic practices and ways to stop the fawning and the people pleasing, so that we can pave the way for secure relationships. And that's coming up. And I really look forward to teaching that to the peeps that are ready to dive deeper in the conversation.
Awesome. So I guess that's it for this particular episode of the Anxiety RX podcast and the Manxiety podcast. And as you say, we will see you at the next perfect time.
Base.
So that's it for today's episode. Thanks for listening. And if the Anxiety RX podcast resonates with you, consider getting my book, also coincidentally called Anxiety RX. Or you can follow me on any of the social media platforms at The Anxiety MD, or my website, www.theanxietymd.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you the next time on the Anxiety RX podcast.